What is crack-a-lackin', fellow thermonuclear AFers? I am Dan Favalli coming at you with my certified, fantabulous co-host who's on the mend from a sickness that has plagued him for at least 50 weeks out of the year, I feel like. This is just some true adversity he's been facing. Grant Hughes, we are here to talk some just big picture observations, questions. It's like sort of a truth or trash episode, but not really. We just wanted to bounce around the NBA, but bounce around the NBA doesn't have good search engine optimization, so we needed to figure out like a central focus there. So we will get to that. We'll let some stragglers come in. If this is your first time checking us out, please remember to subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. If you've done all those things, we appreciate shout outs on Twitter, retweet our promos. You can quote us on Twitter and I will engage and retweet you. And if you have responses, I don't always get to my DMs in a fitting fashion, but I will try to get to reply, shout outs, whatever, as often as I humanly can. So again, do all that stuff. But the question we will kick off the podcast as we wait for people to hopefully join us. Grant, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I can speak today, which as we were talking earlier was not the case yesterday. So the voice could go at any time. So this is, we're kind of living on the edge right now, but I'm doing okay. I'm actually, I'm excited to potentially witness history today. Not just because we're talking in the afternoon slash evening, which we never do for this, but also because, and I didn't look this up, but the Warriors are at Houston tonight. And they are 11-point favorites on the road, having lost 11 straight road games. There's no way that's ever happened before. A team on an 11-game road losing streak is a double-digit favorite on the road. Don't know, didn't look it up. That's insane to me.
Right, and also, oh man, 11 points. And like the Rockets have not been bad lately is the other thing. Like they're not like the normal Rockets. And so I don't know that I would bet on the Rockets winning. That would just be like DEFCON 1. Oh, this team is fucked if they lose to Houston. I would probably bet against them covering based off what we've seen.
Yeah, unbiased Pistons fan, bet the house on Houston. I mean, bet them to cover, right? I mean, like there's
what is their money line? What is Houston's money line?
I don't know. I just was like stunned that, because generally I'll look down the slate of games for that night if I haven't looked further in advance, and I'll look for the smallest spread because I want to watch the most competitive game, you know, and I'll focus more on, you know, a 1-point spread or two or even if I can find it. And I just saw that minus 11. I could not believe what I was looking at.
Man, now that's, I didn't even like that. I didn't see the spread. That just did not compute for me.
No.
So that'll be interesting. So let's start with what the title is here. And I'm one of the things that I came up with. We each have our own. We'll toss them back and forth just to see where this takes us. Anyone who's here and has questions or topics that they want to be thrown in there, we'll do our best to hit them. But I'm just kind of at, I'll throw this at you. The New Orleans Pelicans are going to look dramatically different next season. And I would even frame it this way. The New Orleans Pelicans will trade one or both of CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram before next season. And my basis for this is just like, they're kind of fucked when you just look at how they've been playing without Zion. He's been out since about January 2nd. They are 11-24 of that stretch, 25th in net rating, 25th in offense, 18th in defense. The offensive performance to me is inexcusable. Their shot profile is not great. When you have, I know Ingram missed some good chunk of time during this stretch as well, but people have now cited this. The numbers with Jonas Valanciunas, Ingram, and CJ McCollum on the court are absolutely disastrous. This team still does not take enough threes, like with or without Zion on the floor at this point. And you look at the makeup of the roster, and yeah, they have other assets that they could get rid of if they wanted to step ladder their way to certain contracts. But if you can't count on Zion to be available for half the season, you need to have then like a structure behind him where it's okay, well, we can navigate these stretches without him. It looked like they had that last year. It doesn't look like they have that right now. And I don't necessarily know what the answer is because we don't know what the trade markets will look like. But we went from, there's a video of us just declaring the New Orleans Pelicans contenders. They were like second or third in the West at that point, to now it's just sort of like, well, would you even bet on them being one of the 10 play-in teams in the Western Conference? I don't know why you would. They're in 12th as we record this. And so I think the Pelicans are going to be forced to make drastic changes over the offseason. What say you? Or do we leave open the door if Zion just comes back and they just rattle off a shit ton of victories and they're going to be fine?
So the most confounding aspect of all of this is that, like you said it, we've seen them look good without Zion before. And it was less than a year ago now if we're talking about last season's playoffs and down the stretch. So I totally get that. And look, I don't know how much I still do some like radio hits in Louisiana, and
Your brand is big out there. I know. His brand is strong.
the way that sentiment on Willie Green particularly and the Pelicans as a whole has swung like just back and forth all season is kind of mind-numbing, because first it was like, well, what are we sure about him? And then this guy's a genius. Look at all these young guys that are developing, and look how good they are. Look at this offense they run. And then it goes back the other way because their offense looks terrible. So I think for me, and maybe this is just, I'm not big on change unless there has to be some. I think I would, and this is maybe a fundamentally flawed way to think about it because Zion might just not be someone you can rely on, but I think I'd want to see what they look like again if and when he's back. So that's not to say that they shouldn't explore upgrading the Valanciunas spot. For God's sakes, like how long have we had to harp on this? We don't even need to say anything. Now, literally everyone who's ever listened to this knows what we think about the center position on that roster. So you got to look at that. I think if you can move McCollum, great. I think ultimately one of the biggest takeaways from how bad things have gone for New Orleans is I think a lot less of both McCollum and Ingram in the wake of all this. Because in theory, both of those guys are, they're not 1A options, but 1B certainly seems reasonable. I mean, McCollum was that to Lillard on some good teams, and Ingram's been an all-star. So I'm mostly disappointed in those two. I'm disappointed again, the team's failure to upgrade the center spot. So I think you explore trades. I don't know how easy it's going to be. Certainly Ingram, you'd think there'd be a market for Ingram, right? I mean, given his
Oh, yeah.
age, like McCollum might be a little tougher. I'm not sure who's in the market for, what's he going to make? 35.8 next year, 33.3 the next year. At least it's declining, but I mean, those are big numbers to decline. So synopsis, I think they should explore changes. I don't know how easy it'll be to find them. And I think they have the cover of, if they can't execute a bunch of, significant roster moves, they can say, we still have this theory of the team that has worked in the past, which is with Zion in the middle of it all, this works. So they have the cover against, criticism of fans or whoever else. If they can't make big changes, that they could say, well, we didn't really need to because our plan A is still pretty good, we think.
It seems so much harder for that plan A to be actualized. And to your point about McCollum and Ingram, they're still so good individually. And I do think McCollum has done a better job of getting his 3-point volume up there, but like they just want to get to their spots in the mid-range. And I think you could argue, not that it's problematic, even if Zion's healthy, but now you're not generating the same level of rim pressure without Zion. And so you're basically bottom 10 in the frequency with which you take threes and get to the rim. So that's just the math on that doesn't work out if you're going to be playing from behind in so many of these games. I think you can look at some of the rotation decisions, be like, well, why did Willie Green take so long to really like go back to Trey Murphy, who's been just absolutely on fire?
I really
And
like him. I
yeah,
really
I mean,
like him.
he's been fantastic. They've had some good moments. When I watch Josh Richardson, I don't think the lineup data really lines up with this. Do I think he should have played over Trey Murphy at certain points? No, I do not. But like he feels like he's been good for the team, but the lineup data doesn't necessarily support that. My feelings on this team are so mixed because they have so many players that I like. But I do think the regression from Herb Jones on his 3-pointer specifically, just look at how defenses are guarding him now. That's definitely hurt them. We've already mentioned the center spot to death. And then they need like more playmaking slash functional shooting on this roster. And to that point, I don't know if you listened to the Low Post this past, I think it was last week. They apparently were very close to getting Jared Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley, which would have, I think definitely Malik Beasley would have been a great fit. Jared Vanderbilt playing with Zion. I mean, it's just sort of like it might run into some spacing issues, but it would work. Like what Vanderbilt does defensively covers up for a lot of what you worry about in Zion-led units. And he can, like, Jared Vanderbilt can just defend from the point of attack as well. Like, that's not something even Larry Nance Jr. can do. So they're clearly thinking along those lines. I'd be curious to see what that package is. Like, were they giving up Herb Jones for those players? I think most Pelicans fans would push back against that, but like, were you getting that package for Devontae Graham, another salary Temple, and just picks? I don't know. Maybe you were. I think that smaller options, and not insignificant options, will be available to them without blowing up the crux of this roster. I just watching it without Zion, I'm wondering whether it's worth perpetuating the big three at this point. I would almost lean towards, because if you get one of the players that you need, which is I would just say another playmaker. Like, you would prefer if they were hitting like off the dribble jumpers from three, but like they really do need another playmaker. You do kind of then diminish the value of the ball is never coming out of Zion's hands when he's healthy, nor should it. So then you are diminishing the value of a Brandon Ingram or CJ McCollum. And I wonder if it's in a vacuum, the response is, we'll just trade CJ. But I just wonder if it's actually, well, do you actually look at moving Brandon Ingram instead? Because I think even though he's more plug and play than he was when he came to New Orleans, he's probably less plug and play than CJ McCollum at this point. And you already mentioned this, you can get more for him. And so I do think it's I wouldn't default to that. I want to make that clear. If there's a way that you can just cobble together, non-star assets to get another marquee name in here, yeah, you would actually absolutely do that. And you can probably do it if you're looking for a center. But if you're looking for someone on the perimeter, unless you want to give up on Dyson Daniels and Trey Murphy and like a combination of picks, the path to doing that might be, well, is Brandon Ingram now the player who is available?
Yeah, it's tough. And you mentioned the young guys. I think too that one of the other reasons that I would be hesitant to really, I don't know, to blow it all the way up or make really major changes is I do just still believe that between Daniels and even Murphy's got more levels to go. Herb Jones can't be this bad again. You wouldn't think. I mean, there's upside with a lot of these guys that, maybe just another year of seasoning and just makes things look better. But I agree. Like, this has been really disappointing because, I mean, I don't know how fair it is either to just say, we're going to pull out like the foundational piece of your whole operation in Zion. Like, I don't know how many teams, survive in that scenario, but he's so uniquely valuable to the roster.
The one thing I would interject is when you look at this supporting cast, I do think that there are probably like 24 teams that would kill to have the Zionless Pelicans. And really where this is. It's not fair to be like, fuck the Pelicans. Like, they haven't had Zion for most of the season at this point. That's also like kind of a normal as well. And so I don't know what the answer is, but I look at this roster and I'm, after watching what happened this season, unless Zion just comes back all of a sudden, stays healthy, and they make a run. And even then you have to factor in, well, we're working from this deficit because he missed so much time. So even if they won a playoff series, you can't just assume everything is fine. I look at this roster, and to me, knowing that Zion's injury history, Zion when healthy, just like one of the 5 to 10 best basketball players. Like, he's just so dominant. He was on the fringes of the MVP discourse until he got injured. I just can't. I think if they do just bring it back and decide to, make futz and fiddle on the margins, it's going to be a massive mistake, because I feel like we've now seen you need picture perfect health for the best version of this team to be fully actualized. And you're not going to get that. Like, not every team is going to be like the Kings for this season. We've had to deal with the Sabonis injury for a little bit. We do have a comment from DC Wayne. I'm 5 minutes behind, but for the Pels, don't you guys think New Orleans has to adopt a Clippers death model and start to play Zion 50 to 60 games until proven otherwise, AKA the Kawhi? Look, but there's a whole aspect of what does this do to fans who want to plan to buy tickets. I hate having to think that way, but there's a real chronicness to the way that Zion gets injured, even if it's not the same injury. I wouldn't be against them thinking that way. However, I do think we've now clearly seen that they are not good enough to do that. And that's that's the problem.
Yeah, fair point. Okay, so I have a sort of that question about the Pelicans had some offseason focus. I have one for you here. So I was looking at some free agency stuff, and here's where I've come down. And this, I'll just make a statement to you and you tell me what you think. And if you need more information, I can give it to you, because I have a list of the top free agents in theory. Nikola Vucevic will be the highest profile free agent to change teams this summer. How bleak is that?
That's pretty fucking bleak.
So here's the list. So you got Harden, Kyrie, Van Vliet, Middleton, Jeremy Grant, Porzingis, Draymond, player. Well, I'm including guys with player options, whether or not I think they'll pick them up or not. Kuzma, Dylan Brooks, then there's Vucevic, Jakob Poeltl, Brooke Lopez, Jordan Clarkson, D'Lo, and like now we're into role guys. I don't know how likely any of those guys are to change teams. And then Vucevic, I don't even know that he's that likely, but it just seems like, I don't know, the Bulls should do something and not spend a bunch of money on a center that has not really helped them win a whole lot. So, and if he qualifies as a high profile, I don't know. But I can't think of anyone of any consequence that I'm really sure is going to change teams in free agency this summer. There's going to be a lot of guys that come back, and there's going to be a lot of guys that like don't even that aren't even really, you know, risks to go anyplace. Because, you know, Porzingis strikes me as one of those guys. If he opts out, I think the Wizards will just bring him back, and Kuzma the same way. So Vucevic, the highest profile free agent that I think has a chance to go anywhere.
I'm gonna claim fiction and just be an optimist here. I don't know if that wasn't even a factor.
Take the field.
So I look at it as the more I watch the Mavs, or you consider the situation with Kyrie, he'll be back in Dallas. There's just
Think so
I
too.
don't know where he goes, even if he just leaves outright or with the sign and trade. I do think, are we just discounting sign and trade scenarios with Fred VanVleet or the Rockets doing or Magic doing something wild and really throwing in money that the Raptors don't want to pay? I would also look at, so two names that I'm fascinated by, and kind of three, one I'll get off right from the beginning. Kristaps Porzingis, I feel like, is going to be a fascinating free agent. I don't think he leaves Washington, so I'll throw him out of there. The Wizards pay their own players. That's there. We talked about why this is one of the most well-run franchises in the league, is that they've proven they pay their players. That's a joke for anyone who's not watching, can't see Grant like literally cackling. Draymond Green, there's just something weird there. If I had to bet, I feel like one of Jordan Poole or Draymond Green won't be with the Warriors to start next season. I would bet on it being Jordan Poole. But the one that I'm just sort of looking at now is Jeremy Grant, because everyone assumed he was going to extend with the Blazers. He still can. He has until June 30th to do it. And they might still, even if he enters free agency, they can pay him the most money. They're so bad. They're so bad. Isn't there a chance that they decide to pivot or go the sign and trade route with him to like bring back assets? Even Dame, I don't know if you saw Dame's comments where it's like, at some point you have to accept reality and we're just not going to be one of the 10 best teams in the West, but I like to play. That's just fucking sad, man. The
I mean,
Blazers
I
really just.
respect it though. I mean, I mean, you probably shouldn't. I respect that that's like what he thinks, because
Oh,
but I don't know that I think it's a great idea to just broadcast that.
Oh. First of all, I love you broadcast that because I think it puts due pressure on the front office to get their shit together over the offseason. I liked their moves that they made. I think we were pretty high on them coming into this season. I think they've underachieved relative to the talent on their roster. And then they acted. I don't care how much you like Matisse Thybulle in Portland. You acted like a fucking seller at the trade deadline. And you have Damian Lillard, who should probably finish top 10 in MVP voting. That he has had a spectacular season. And I'm just wondering, does Grant decide to go to a team that can actually win? Maybe do the Blazers decide they don't want to have to pay him? Could they could make other moves to lower their payroll where it's all right, we got rid of Nurkic if we can find a taker for him and we're okay paying Jeremy Grant what could be like $30 million a year. I just wouldn't we've seen Grant leave before when we thought that he wouldn't. I don't think this is that situation because I think he's now found the point where he can get money and a role that's he was being used as an accessory in Denver. He is not that in Portland. I think we can all agree on that. But I just nothing's off the table for me in Portland. So I have no idea what the fuck they're doing. I have none, zero, zilp, zich, nada. And I'm just gonna be. I also just want to be an optimist and say if Vucevic is like the biggest name to change teams in free agency, I will worry about maybe our job security after that, because a big part of what we do is like it happens in the offseason around the trade deadline, in addition to watching the regular season basketball. So, and also Kyle Kuzma being an unrestricted free agent, that feels like it could get it, Washington pays its players, but it wouldn't shock me if like he left somewhere, like did the Jeremy Grant, where it's like, oh, you're going to get paid from Washington, but you might get paid to play for a better team than the Wizards.
Is there a player that you can remember? This is rhetorical because the answer is no, because I can't either. Who has improved so much and changed as a player in ways that nobody really would have expected over the course of his career than Grant, who has apparently affected winning less and less as he's gotten better. Because what you're so he's a $30 million a year guy in theory, right? In free agency. And he's the usually second best, but sometimes third best player, depending on how Anfernee Simons is playing for a team that is not going to be in the play-in, probably. You're going to give $30 million a year to a guy that was the second or third best player on a lottery team. Like that's, and so he, it's amazing because he starts out as like a process era, you know, shoot a bunch of threes, even though you can't, because it's going to tank our season on purpose, to a like five position defensive piece that doesn't really score in Oklahoma City. Then he starts shooting threes. Then he gets to Denver and he's an awesome kind of three and D. I don't know what you'd call him. Then he's a number one option in Detroit. And he's just adding layers and layers and layers. And everywhere he goes, like, and now he's in Portland as like a theoretically a put you over the top piece, or that's probably what they, that's why they coveted him for so long. And now he, now it's just like, yeah, he might get $30 million a year. And I'm less convinced than ever that he's actually like helpful to a winning effort. And maybe that's not fair, but it's just like, we're gonna, I don't know, if I'm, if it's my team, and granted, there aren't that many of these because not everybody has $30 million of cap space. Almost nobody does. And I'm going to give that much to him. It's basically like, one, you're going to get Detroit Pistons Jeremy Grant, who looks great and gets numbers and you don't win. Or two, you're getting Trailblazers Jeremy Grant, who looks even better and shoots 40% from three, and just your defense still sucks no matter what. And just, I don't know. I don't know what to make of him. He's one of the most unusual, he has got one of the most unusual career arcs of a player that I can remember. And I don't know, that's not a question, that's not a hot or not, that's just an observation that's been bothering me ever since I started thinking about free agency.
I will say you probably need to get to a point where you're not treating Jeremy Grant like your fourth or fifth offensive option, but you're also not treating him like number one or number 1B
Right.
and or even number two. He feels like his wheelhouse is the third best player. And so, yeah, he's going to be worth that money because I think he can impact winning. He just hasn't been on a team since Denver in this role that's been built for him to impact winning.
Sure.
And just the Blazers, clearly, like, we might have missed on some of the makeup of their roster. We knew they were a little bit small, that I think they would suck this much at grabbing rebounds. Probably not. Thought they'd probably show more resistance at the rim as well. So that's a miss on my part there. So I get it. He's improved so much and it feels like he's impacted winning less. That feels like a function of the situations where now we know his limitations. Okay, he can't be the one, or maybe even the two on a really good team, but you slide him into a 3-2B type of role, and I think that he could absolutely impact winning at a higher level.
But then
So,
I don't want to pay him 30 million. That's the
well,
thing. If that's the
to
correct
be
role for him.
fair, $30 million on a $150 million salary cap is
Right, right, right. We got
20%.
to recalibrate now because the cap's gone.
Do
But
you want to
still.
max Jeremy Grant, which would be in the 40s? Absolutely not.
No, of course not. No. Okay. What do you got for me?
Oh, I have this one for you. Are the New York Knicks still underrated? Are we discounting how dangerous they are? And just before we get into the nitty-gritty of their players, their makeup, since December 1st, this is December 1st, everyone's making much ado over the Josh Hart trade. The Knicks turned a point way before the Josh Hart trade. December 1st, 32 and 18. This, so we're talking about 50 games. They are fourth in net rating, third in offense, and seventh in defense. And they're just kind of, they're not being written off. And I don't think you should automatically default to, all right, like they're the best team in the East or something. And you can listen to like fans after wins just get like so, like rightfully so, I guess, just like jacked up about their ceiling. And I'll frame it this way. Is the New York Knicks a ceiling? We've talked about them. Oh, maybe they could win a playoff series. Is that underselling what they're actually capable of in this Eastern Conference?
Maybe a little bit. And this is good because I have a follow-up next question for you that you did not know I was going to ask you. Not that any either of us knew what we were going to ask each other. I think they are a little underrated. And so the first thing I did when you as you were talking was I gotta go look at what their opponent 3-point percentage is, because that's always, you know, that's what is it, three, and it is 3 years running now where we've said, well, their defense is a little fake because opponents can't keep hitting threes at like a, you know, 33, 34% clip. And sure enough, opponents are shooting 35.1% from three, which is the third lowest percentage in the league this year. Except this is 3 years in a row where their opponents have shot poorly in the bottom four. And at some point, you just start to have to, you know, give it to them that something about Tibbs' defense, just maybe they're letting the right guys shoot. It's all that kind of stuff that we attribute to the Bucks' good 3-point defense over the years. So I can't really point to that as like, oh, this is a smoke and mirrors operation. I do think the offense is real. And I do think the defense is real. And I also think that the makeup of the team, the types of players they have, and how hard they play. Brunson's an example of that. There's not statistics. I'm not going to cite the statistics. We all know you just listed them all. Their profile is legit, right? So if you're going to say that, oh, they're suspect or they don't deserve to be considered a threat to win more than one playoff series, you have to start pointing to other things in their makeup. And I don't really find any that give me concerns or make me suspect that this is not a team that's built to continue doing what it's done in the playoffs, because the effort's there, the execution is there, and when it's not, they do have enough individual talent and shot making. Seth Partnow has done some really interesting stuff about, what do you really need to succeed on offense and defense in the playoffs? And a lot of it is starting to show that, like, your shot profile doesn't matter as much as just having guys that can make hard shots or get their own stuff. And Brunson is that way. Randall is that way every other year, and this is one of the good ones. And they just have enough guys that can play off those. Quickly coming on is a big deal. Mitchell Robinson is pissed off about his offensive role, which I don't love, but has just
He
improved.
apologized. I can't take this. Might be, I'm not trying to insult him. I just can't take him seriously.
It's hard
I
to,
just
right?
like who's what was it Snapchat or I like who's Snapchatting about this stuff is at best like the fifth offensive option when there's five players on the court, even if you shape shifted your role to include more
Right.
usage. And he just seems like such a likable, lovable guy. And like the team just feels so together that I can't imagine him just like being absolutely fed up. But I get what you're saying. I just can't take, I
It's
don't mean
fine.
that as an insult, but I think it sounds like I'm being an asshole. I can't take him seriously.
Right. Well, and it's always the big guys that have this kind of gripe, it seems like. And it's just never a good look when it's the guy that doesn't make free throws and his range is dunk and all this other stuff. So anyway, short answer, I don't know where I'd put them. I'd put them as a, we've talked about this a little in the past. I can't get them on the Sixers or the Celtics, although I mean, the Celtics have their own problems, or the Bucks level, but like against Cleveland, certainly Brooklyn, Miami, any of those other teams in that, four through seven range, I think the Knicks probably should be favored to win. And then after that, it's going to be matchup dependent. But so I want to look, that's kind of a this year thing. I wanted to ask you about the bigger picture, because this is a
Well,
team
can
that
I
has.
interject on the just to wrap up this year? I'm trying to figure out what their actual biggest flaws would be for me, like looking at a playoff series. And I don't really worry. Their offense is not inventive when you watch it. Their invention is a healthy Jalen Brunson just being super fast, crafty,
Hard to guard.
smart, incredible footwork, and like knowing how to sort of allocate touches. And then it's, oh, Julius Randle is shooting the fuck out of the ball from everywhere. And it feels when the Julius Randle stuff. When you look at his most improved player campaign, there feels a lot of similarities to that year to this season when you're looking at the structure of their offense. Not this Julius Randle feels more sustainable, in part because this is now not the only player you're relying on to do that. And
Yes.
you're not banking on the RJ Barrett to make a leap. It's Jalen Brunson, foot stuff. Hopefully he'll be fine, will be healthy. And like he might be your best player anyway, even when Julius Randle's playing like this. So I think that's a big difference for them. And the two things that actually worry me, and I think they're more inoculated against this, is the RJ Barrett wild card. He is one of the players. I went from saying, no, you don't trade him for Donovan Mitchell, because the whole point of this is you want to pair Donovan Mitchell with RJ Barrett and Brunson and Randle, or I didn't have Randle in there. I'm going to be fully honest, but you want to
Nobody
pair him
did,
with
sure.
those two to make the run. Now I'm just like, well, like, could they trade him for Mikal Bridges? Or at this point, would I even get smaller and put him in a package for Bradley Beal with minimal first round compensation this year? And to then he'll have another game like he did against the Nuggets where it's, oh, there's still some plays, but then it's, oh, look at RJ. That is a problem to me. But I've also think that Tibbs is the type of guy where if he's actively hurting you, that's not going to be someone who's going to be closing
No.
late in the
He's
game.
proved that. I mean, he has sat him.
So I'm still concerned about that. My other one, and this is like it's a mini question directed at you. Who is their best one-on-one on-ball defender, however you want to frame it? The answer is probably the same person anyway, but I just wanted to frame it that way.
Mean, is it Hart? Is that the guy that you trust? I mean, Grimes, I don't know. I mean, they have, that's the thing, is they have more than one guy that they can throw out there. I don't know. Am I just blanking on someone that I should be naming?
No. I don't think you're blanking. I mean, it might actually be Deuce McBride if we're going to be super
Well, but
honest,
he's
but
not going to play major minutes, right? I mean,
I'm
especially
just,
at
I
Brunson.
think it's probably Immanuel Quickley or Quentin Grimes at this point. Because I feel like Josh Hart is just more of a, he's just more of an awesome team defender,
Yeah,
like sort of a smaller
he
Robert
causes
Covington.
Trouble.
Right. But so you look at that, neither of those players are too big. And Quickly will play. Quickly has to play.
Yeah,
Quentin Grimes isn't necessarily guaranteed. He will play, but he's not guaranteed. He's so much of a roller coaster on offense still that I don't know that he's guaranteed to play. And you just look at their size, and it's this roster still kind of needs RJ Barrett to maybe be their best defender at some point when you're looking at how they go up against Apex Wings how Zach Lowe says Ape. That's all stuck in my mind now. He's written and said it so much. I have like Apex and Predator Wings. I try to actively not say it against Starry Wings. They have options, and Emmanuel Quickley's fantastic. And I think, I don't know who's talked about this. Someone very smart. It might've been Seth Part now, but there's more value in point of attack defense now because of how offenses are run, where we used to write it off as well, like whatever. So having smaller guys who can defend the point of attack really well. And I think Quickley can guard up. And I really do like Grimes. I just wonder if they get into certain matchups, like they might be better suited, if you really think about it, to face Philly, to face Cleveland, who runs through those two smaller guards, than they would be to face, maybe that's not spicy, but like if you go up against a Milwaukee or a Boston, or even if you had to go up against, in theory, the Heat's offense is dog shit, but if you had to go up against a Jimmy Butler, like that's a team that's harder to defend than for you based off the makeup of this roster than the like actual upper echelon of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. I should have mentioned Quickley, but I just don't think Quickley is big enough to guard even someone like, I feel like he's like Jaylen Brown is a little too big for Quickley, I think. And, you know, and Brown is not like not a Tatum or a Butler or even Middleton, mate. I don't know that. So yeah, to your take point taken. I think that is a need. So that does tie to what I'm going to ask you, and you've brushed up against it a little bit. But so like next steps for the Knicks, not talking, you know, I'm talking like off season. So what type of player should they add? I think we've kind of hit on it. And do you have one in mind, and do they need to do it this summer? Does it need to happen now as opposed to, you know, it may, cause do you, so they didn't reach quote unquote reach for Donovan Mitchell, but like they could go reach for Brad Beal or Zach LaVine or whatever, like, If whether those are the guys or not, they have the ability to go do that. Should it happen, or should they say, who's the guy we can get this summer that sort of fits whatever you think they need? Is now the time, or can you go another year?
Man, that's a tough. So
and just say, well, in July, maybe let's go to February, or let's go to 2024. Like, what's the timeline if you are adding somebody?
The second part of that question is super tough. And so it probably comes back to the caliber of player that you think they need, because they clearly, I think they need like a wing. Like if it was a Mikal Bridges or an OG Anunoby, that also gets into the question of are either those players, I mean, Mikal Bridges might just be high enough end to where it feels like you're acquiring a star. OG Anunoby is not going to be in that vein. Do you need to do it right away? I think I would probably say no, just because they don't have any of these first round picks that are going to look less valuable as time goes on. You're either going to like or hate New York's own, like you're either going to love them or hate them. It feels like there's no in between moving forward and looking at their distant first rounders. The other first round picks, you actually might get clarity if you wait on when they're actually going to convey, when you look at the Detroit and Washington selections. And at this point, like, you can't do anything to hurt Obi Toppin's trade value any more than just keeping him this long. And I was on they marginalized Obi too much, but you can't, like, this season was unavoidable for most of it, just how well that Julius Randle is playing. Like, they can be more flexible with, like, maybe trying to play Top and Randle together, but I don't know how you can't be upset about Obi's development and also happy that the Knicks are where they are. That's a complicated thing to juggle. And then Quickley's trade value has only gone up, even though he's extension eligible, and waiting in theory when he's on his next deal and worth more money, unless you think he's going to go the route of RJ Barrett to be just so inconsistent and up and down. I don't think you need to do it, but I do think there's a very clear archetype of player that they need. And I think you juggle it between two. It's, well, let's just get someone who complements or elevates what we already have and fills a need where you're looking on the wings, or you just go out and say, well, we need someone who is just the best player on this team when they automatically come in. And so that might give them more optionality than perhaps most teams in similar situations. That's where I'm kind of at with them, though. I don't think it needs to be I think ideally it would be someone who's the best player on this team. I'm not going to lie, but I think that you can acquire a Mikal Bridges, so to speak, not to make it sound like he sucks, but you can acquire Mikal Bridges and be fairly confident that this makes a pretty significant difference for the long-term outlook of your team.
Okay.
My next one for you is a lot more basic. Are the Philadelphia 76ers, and we just talked about this for Bleacher Report, are they tier one title contenders, tier two, tier three? Like, where do they fall on this? They've played out an incredible stretch since the All-Star break without having the easiest schedule. During that time, they have the best offense in the league. Joel Embiid has been absolutely killing it, but the defense is sort of still waxed and waned. The defense is actually worse with him on the floor. I don't know what to make of this roster. I feel like for a team that has the profile of a championship contender, they've had more, like, they have those highest highs, but they also feel like they have these lower lows that make you really go into existential crisis mode with them.
So I kind of view Milwaukee now as in a tier by itself in terms of title contenders, but I would put the Sixers with whoever else you want to put on the tier right below that. If that means they're with Boston, fine. Denver, fine. And then after that, it's like a bunch of ifs basically, right? Like Phoenix, who knows? But I think the only reason I can't get them all the way up to Milwaukee's level is we just know that there are more questions and more sort of obvious ways for it to go wrong, right? The Harden postseason stuff, Embiid failing over and over and over again to stay healthy through a playoff run. The defensive stuff that you mentioned, the fact that there'll be a lot of high leverage minutes where opposing teams can go at Tyrese Maxey and or James Harden. There's just going to be guys to attack. There will be teams that scheme such that PJ Tucker is going to have to shoot like 8 threes or 9 threes in a game. He'll be left alone. Like, there's just ways to go against the Sixers that, just because we're just comparing them to the Bucks, because that's the only team I'd say is 100% a more dangerous, you know, or more legitimate title threat. There aren't really those kind of, you're not going to mess around and, like, you know, poke at some of the Bucks' weaknesses the same way you can at the Sixers. But we're talking about, I favor one team certainly over the Sixers, and everybody else is either at that level or below it, and the vast majority are below. So yeah, I think, you know, sometimes it just feels like, and I thought this about the Celtics for most of this year, and I'm questioning it now, but sometimes it just kind of feels like it's time for someone like Embiid to just have that run. Because based on how he's played, he's been the best player in the world for, what, a couple months? Certainly the last few weeks. He's got it in him. And so as long as it just holds together, there's scenarios where he just runs through the playoffs. Like, that's on the table. And I don't feel that way about anybody but Giannis and the Bucks.
Would you take the Celtics or the Sixers right now?
Are they playing against each other, or is it just like who's going to make it farther against the neutral field? You know what I mean? Because those are like two different questions.
Well, who do you trust more heading into the playoffs?
Well, I can't really separate them. I think, well, I mean, what are the Celtics like, 10 and 11 or 11 and 10 or something? They're a 500 team since the All-Star break, basically. I think today, right now, I'd have to say the Sixers, but like, I can't just forget, you know, the last, you know, year and three quarters of the Celtics. You know, that's hard. That's hard for me to do. So check back with me at the end of the regular season if the Celtics have like a couple decent weeks. But like, the Celtics look bad, right? They don't look like they know what they're doing on offense half the time. Like, Derek White's getting benched at the end of games for Brogdon now, which is a total flip. I don't know who you count on. Jason Tatum does not look bouncy or healthy at all. I think Jared Weiss had a bunch of good observations on them today after that loss to the Jazz, one of which was Tatum does not look quite right. And he's played a bazillion minutes this year, so that's not great. So yeah, I don't know. So I'm waffling like I always do. I guess I take the Sixers by a nose, but do you have strong feelings about Sixers versus Boston?
Strong? No, I think I want to see it in the playoffs. That would be a great second round matchup, I guess, is what it would shape up to be at this point. I think I would still take the Celtics just because I'm going to have the inherent distrust of James Harden. And if he's not going to play well, like, there's only so much that Joel Embiid can then actually do, right? Which is a weird thing to say about, of any of the foremost MVP candidates, he has the best second best player, right? James Harden. Cause there's Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, Jamal Murray. like and
Holiday
then Drew
slash
Holiday or
Middleton.
Chris Middleton, depending on where you land. I would take James Harden over any of those guys.
Yeah, except in the playoffs, maybe. I don't know.
But that's the thing. That's so weird. I don't so know. I'd probably take the Celtics. And also just the Sixers, some of the stuff just skeeves me out where it's like, well, why aren't they a team that's better at rebounding? And what's really going on with their transition defense at points? But I think I'm with you pretty much on everything you said, that they're not tier one yet, but I feel like we look at them. We look at what Joel Embiid has done. We look at what James Harden and Tyrese Maxey have done. We looked at the peak of their defense this year. We looked at having PJ Tucker, some of even the lineup combinations Doc Rivers has chosen. And it just makes me wonder, well, why don't we consider them in the same vein as even the Celtics, which, and maybe we should, or we do, but they're just, they're like the most non-obvious contender of what should be an obvious contender. So I'm just, they're so confusing to me in like, not an uncomfortable way, but a way that makes me feel like, oh, are we kind of underrating them too? But maybe we're not.
Speaking of underrating, go ahead. I was going to
Chris Leclerc, queen defense, team defense in the playoffs usually advances. With Ja coming back, why shouldn't Memphis be favorites in the West? Chris, how long you got? Look, Memphis's offensive model is not sustainable in the playoffs. There are going to be teams that limit their transition opportunities. I also have no idea what's going to go on with Steven Adams as we get into the playoffs. He's out for basically the rest of the regular season, at least. What does that do to their offensive rebounding? And also being so reliant on offensive rebounding in the playoffs, we saw it last year, like that's not going to be a sustainable model either. And you need more than John Morant and even Desmond Bane, who's just been so spectacular this year. You need more than them as like actual half court counters. And it's basically more than Ja, because I don't know that Desmond Bane is they've tried it, but as the slow it down, go get you a bucket there type of guy. And even if he is, or is somewhere in between that, it's just not going to be enough. And so I talk a lot about inherent distrust. I do not trust Memphis's offense, the best version of his offense, to translate to the playoffs. And they are a team that as of right now, put Ja Morant back on there. And I don't know that there is a first round opponent they face that I would pick them to beat at this very moment.
I just think it's a couple things. They are very much a team that for you and certainly for you and for me too, increasingly, they just don't have the benefit of the doubt. I think they're going to be one of those teams that we need to see it before we say, oh, you know what? It turns out the lack of a half court offense doesn't really matter because they do X, Y, and Z really well. And that makes up for it. That just hasn't happened yet. We're not dealing with like a 5-year sample with this team, but all of their flaws are so conspicuous and really so problematic for playoff success that it's just difficult to get over. It's not as simple as you get John Morant back. Then a lot of your best lineups have him, Dylan Brooks, maybe Steven Adams. You've lost Brandon Clark, who really does affect your optionality on defense. I've just absorbed your word optionality.
Once you get to scalability, you'll know that you
scalability. Just fully, yeah, that's gonna be tough. If I start saying things are thermonuclear, we know we spent too much time together. I think fundamentally, forget the like, oh, prove it to us and we'll believe in you. Forget that, even though I rely on that all the time. They just don't have enough shooting. They have not proved that they can score against set defenses, which you're going to see more of. I just don't think they're built right now without at least another shooter or two. And Kennard sort of counts, but that's someone that's going to get attacked on defense. You need your two-way types. You need your prime Danny Greens out there instead of Luke Kennard. So we are not that far removed, I think, from at least when I thought Memphis. This is before all the Ja stuff, all the Dylan Brooks Warrior stuff, before the Adams injury, certainly before Clark got hurt, where I kind of liked Memphis better than Denver, even with the half-court offense stuff, just because I thought they were so good defensively and Ja had not completely cratered from deep yet that, yeah, I mean, they looked – they. I didn't have any real nits to pick other than, are you sure you can score without just – banging it off the glass 5 times and having Steven Adams clean it up. That's just not the case anymore. I would take a lot of teams in the West over them.
A kinder way to put it, and we do have to acknowledge, they gave the Grizzlies, they gave the Warriors their toughest playoff series last year in the West anyway. Yeah. And that matters. And then also, it just feels like they're one player short. Mm-hmm. And I guess it does bother me. I've gone on a rant how many times that their big solution to knowing this isn't just an impulsive midseason decision was, let's just go get Luke Kennard. which feels like part of their needs without actually filling enough of them. And it creates another problem because he has been targeted defensively and like they've struggled defensively with him on the court. A lot of that might be with who's available and how their rotations have been impacted, but that's just how the season works. And so I, you know, to go big picture here, I would just say like they absolutely need to take the home run type swing over the offseason because you can't trust in your just internal development as much as they have, because it's like, what are we waiting on now? We don't know. I loved Zaire Williams leading into the end of last season. The injury to start this year, I think, probably hampered what happened. So how do you factor in him moving forward? Then do you really expect Jake LaRavia, David Roddy, or Santi Aldama to be the needle nudging difference maker? Do you even get to a point where Jaren Jackson Jr. is playing 30 plus minutes a game for an entire season? Another fair point of issue with this team.
I mean, like everyone says, oh, he's gotten a lot better about fouling. There's two or three every game where you're just face palming. Like, why are you under the defensive boards?
If he doesn't win Defensive Player of the Year, that will be the reason why, because his playing time has been so tamped down that he will be one of the lowest minute defensive players of the years in NBA history.
Yeah. All right. Is it my
turn? We have one more before we get out of here that we want to cover.
Okay. This is an unfair question, so that's why I'm going to ask it of you. I was doing all NBA stuff. I've been thinking a lot about it lately. Kawhi Leonard, I think we've already said, is going to be on an all NBA team for me. So just some background stats before I get to the question. He has missed two games since December 5th that were not scheduled, second night of a back-to-back rest. So he's basically been available except for when the organization or whoever says you got to take a break. He has been just absurdly, stupidly good. 62.3% true shooting. The Clippers are plus 11.4 with him on versus off. They never win without him in the lineup. They're 10-19 without him. 3-14 the last 17 games with him. They're awesome. So going into next season, and you're talking about, I want this guy for the full season and a playoff run. So it's not MVP. It's not that kind of, who's going to provide the most value. It's like, give me this guy as my main piece. I'm trying to win a championship. Kawhi Leonard should be viewed as a top X player in that discussion.
Oh, God.
I'm ready to get ridiculous with my number.
And just hedge. What did you put? I'm going to go with top 10. Five.
Yeah.
So who are the players you're taking over him? Let's do that.
The only guy I'm 100% sure is Giannis. Like, there's no question you would take Giannis. That Giannis is the correct answer to the question of, you get to pick one guy to anchor your team in a season you're trying to win a championship, like starting in October, right? Like, there's no, we love Steph. We love, you name it. It's Giannis. After
we've
that,
we actually received some criticism because we love Steph too much on this pod. I don't know if you saw that.
Not,
we don't
possible.
Criticize Steph Curry enough. I don't know what we're supposed to criticize.
What are you supposed
Steph
to
Curry
say?
For. Right.
he's the most
unbiased Rockets fan who said that we have a Steph Curry agenda. And if the agenda is Steph Curry's a transformative offensive player who's one of the most valuable players in the league, that is, I wouldn't call that an agenda. I would just call that an unassailable fact.
Yeah, sorry. But okay, I guess what? I didn't pick him first in this discussion. I picked Giannis. I might pick Steph. Steph would be in that top five. But then after that, it's like, I mean, Tatum is in the conversation. Durant is in the conversation. Although I honestly have more reservations about, or at least as many reservations about Durant's health as I do Kawhi's, just based on the time he's consistently missed. So I don't know who is definitely above Kawhi other than Giannis. So that's why I just went top five, because the top 10 is like, yeah, of course. I think I would take Kawhi probably over Jokic if you're saying you're trying to win a title with this guy starting in October.
October, though? Because here's my counter to that is, we are now, if you're factoring in October, the Clippers are fifth in the West, which is maybe higher than like you would expect at this point. Their road to the playoffs gets a lot harder because of how up and down they've been throughout October, where at least with, let's look at the Nuggets as an example, with Jokic, you are going through this 2-5 over your last seven games. You're still first in the West. And so that's going to give you, you could say, well, imagine Kawhi on the first seed in the West, then it's just so bankable. They get the most optimal playoff route. I guess you could get into the nuances of, well, is being in fifth better than being in first this year?
No.
So when you're talking about just the playoffs, it gets more interesting, because I would have Giannis and I would have Steph over Kawhi beyond a shadow of a doubt. But when we're factoring in the regular season too, that's when I think you can start to get into Embiid and Luka and maybe even Tatum, LeBron, maybe even. And
Maybe.
so that's why it gets so tough for me. I might even, so if it was just playoffs, top five for sure. But since it's the regular season, I think top five would actually be pushing it. And it's just a little too dismissive of players who are, and look, he's been more available than I think people realize since December. I want to make that clear. But there was still the time that he missed, that huge chunk of time leading into December. So I can't go top five when you're framing it since October.
I'm doing it. I don't care.
I think you, honestly, I think you have a Kawhi Leonard agenda. Why is there not more
Maybe
criticism of Kawhi on this podcast?
that is a fairer assessment than anyone saying we like Steph Curry too much. We don't really talk about him that much. All we do is whenever we bring up a shooting stat, say, "Oh, this guy's amazing. He's the best, except
It
for,"
was
and then we just
in
mention that
response to
Steph.
having Steph Curry on an all NBA team. I think specifically having him on first team, which I don't know that I would have him on first team. I think there's
I do.
between him, Shea, Luka, it's tough for me. But I don't think it's disrespectful to put him over De'Aaron Fox for this season, because when it comes to all, if it was MVP voting, that gets interesting because I factor in sample a lot there. When
For
it's all
sure.
NBA, I really do wait. I care if players are available. Zion's not going to make an all NBA team for me. So flat out right there. But I'm also more inclined to look at, yes, I want to look at total minutes, but I also just want to look on their overall impact. I think you have more malleability there than it comes to the MVP race. And so I don't think it's, will I have Steph on first team? Well, I haven't done mine. You've put more thought into it recently. We'll have to do it at some point for the podcast, but I don't, you know, I do agree though. You have a Steph Curry agenda, and I'm honestly fed up. It's something that could make this podcast just fizzle out and die at one point because of how gung ho you are about Steph Curry.
I think we don't talk about him enough, if anything. All right, I have another one, but if you've got one, we could go for it.
Oh no, I was going to say, do you want to take us out? But give the single digit number of people watching us one more.
Okay,
They're
this is more
clamoring for
just
it.
this is really just for my own enjoyment to see what your reaction is to this. Question: is there an argument that Jalen Williams is better or has a brighter future than Paolo Banchero? Because this is 1-2 for rookie of the year right now, I think pretty clearly. Do you want some numbers?
Yeah, I might need like a day to recover
Okay.
from the question, but it hit me.
So the numbers are like, obviously they favor Banchero because he's the youngest to score this many or that many. Like, so this is more of a and look, OKC is plus 0.8 points per, like less than 1 point per 100 possessions in the positive with Williams on the floor and SGA off. And when SGA is off, it's not like Jalen Williams is running the offense. Sometimes it's Josh Giddey, but he is having a real hand in it. The basis of this question is mostly, I think Banchero clearly has one way to be great, which is you're a top option scorer at a premium position, right? He's a big forward that could be your first option scorer. But it's kind of iffy, right? He's been an atrocious shooter. Especially the second half of the season. He was like 1 for 33 or 3 for 33 in February from deep. His true shooting percentage, I think, is below 50%. It's just like he's been just a volume guy, right? He's a rookie, fine. I get it. I still think his potential to be the best player on a really good team and your number one scoring option is legit. I think Williams has a lot more ways to become a very good, all-star level guy. So I guess it's just about your tolerance for like a risk reward kind of setup. But Williams is a big wing who has point guard instincts, who can shoot it from three. He's proved over after a cold start, can defend the best guy on the other team and would do it more if Lu Dort was not on his own team, can get to the basket, is getting fouled a ton. He just looks to me like the type of guy that could be the second best player on a really good team as like a floor. I really think that there's building momentum based on what he's done the last 2 months, that Jalen Williams is going to be a guy that is not just going to be, hey, remember when Paolo ran away with rookie of the year and went on to make 10 all-star games? I think Williams is going to be closer to like, there's going to be a conversation, different players, but I think the number of paths Williams has to being a really good player in a number of different ways makes it an interesting kind of thought experiment for like which kind of prospect you value. Total devil's advocate case. I will admit it. Devil's advocate right here. I think you'd pick Paolo, right? Because he's, but still, it's interesting.
It just comes back to, so you mentioned with this the stuff Seth Partnow has done recently on the value of shot making. And so
Yep.
you're gonna dig into, and I think Jalen Williams, look, half of his shot made shots this year have basically been unassisted. Paolo Banchero has been about 55% of his shots have gone unassisted. That number is going to climb because he is that type of player, and he's going to get more of those unassisted jump shot looks, even when you look at it now. Like sub 10% of Jalen Williams's 3-point attempts have been, or 3-point makes have been unassisted. Paolo Banchero is already at basically a third of his 3-point makes have been unassisted. And that's maybe that's not a big enough difference, but I'm looking at someone who can be more of a self-creator from different levels. And so, do I think Jalen Williams will be more plug and play, more scalable, maybe than Paolo Banchero? To where if you put Paolo Banchero on your team and you want him to be the third best player, it's harder than if you want him
Right.
to be the first or the second best player. That's fair, but I'm still going to take, in this case, right now, the player to me that has the highest end individual outcome. And that is by far to me, Paolo Banchero, because of how valued the stuff he does on offenses. And so if Jalen Williams comes, how does Jalen Williams get there? Might be more of an interesting question for me personally. And it's if he just comes back and it just has like a, does he have like a more of a pull-up jumper all of a sudden, like to create off the bounce? And I don't know, that's way easier said than done. That is just, that is next level. Talk about having an agenda. My God.
Jalen Williams did go to Santa Clara, and I have obvious agendas. I just want to get one last little quick. Obviously, like the goal of first of all, Banchero is a year younger. That's a big factor too. Like that, if you're talking about rookies in terms of growth trajectory, and obviously the goal of picking high in the draft is to get the guy with some chance, however small it is, of being, you know, a superstar. And I think Banchero has that. Just to argue against myself. But in, let's look at in March, we got 8 games, so not a big sample. Williams is averaging 19.6, 6.6, and 4.9, shooting 56% from the field, 47.8% from deep, 66.5 true shooting. And I just like, this guy's going to be so good, Dan. I just want to get, if we do nothing else in this podcast, I just want to get on record that Jalen Williams is going to be really, really good.
We talk plenty of Thunder for a national podcast, I'd argue. So he will be talked about continuously. I don't look, first team All NBA very clearly. Yes, a no-brainer. I think second rookie of the year ballot. I don't even know who the alternative would be. Who's going to finish third? We haven't done our rookie of the year ballots yet, but that's,
Kessler, gotta be Kessler.
yeah, that's fair. Less of an open-ended question than I thought. To have him better than Pat, like I just look at it and go, maybe it's a flawed way of thinking. Who's more likely to be the engine of an offense? And that's just Paolo Banchero.
For sure, for sure.
If you're
Interesting.
asking who's going to be the best third best player on a team, then yeah, I think Jalen Williams is like, yeah, you if you told me that Paolo Banchero can't be the best or second best player on a really good team, then maybe that's when you prefer Jalen Williams because Paolo Banchero's game doesn't look like it's situated. But all, I even look at Paolo Banchero, you mentioned the youth, he's even better defensively than I thought he would be this season. So no, he's not going to be what Jalen Williams is when he can just go and cover one of the two or the first or second best guy on the other team's offense, but like he looks like he's going to be fine if you want to put him in situations where you need him to switch, that he's just going to be fine. And so, man, I'm surprised. I can't
Ridiculous.
believe that was one of the questions you asked, but do you want to take us out of here?
I do. I just want to, you know, just paraphrase what you said. Jalen Williams is definitely going to be better than Paolo Banchero. We agree on that. Anyway, everybody, thanks for checking in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the comments. If you have not done so already, please follow us everywhere on socials, engage with us, get on our Discord. Pretty great conversations on there. That's where we draw a lot of our questions from. Rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies. Word of mouth, that's also good. If you like our podcast, just let people know. And you can check us out on the Bleacher Report app. We're going to do a live stream on Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern, and jump in there and we'll get another pod out. I'm sure Dan has many more things to talk about, and I'll be back as well next week. And yeah, thanks everybody. We close as always with a shout out to the one and only Frank Ntilikina and an apology to Jared.